Cliff Central Revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
Is your domestic worker meeting the full potential of their role? Hello, hello, and welcome to the Mate Sessions with CliffCentral.com. My name is Mbali Njomane, and I'm here with my beautiful co-host, Julia Cindy.
Hi, I love how you make that singing voice as you introduce me. I feel so special.
I know what you're talking about. You're not that special.
I feel so welcome.
You. You are welcome, and it's so good to be back in studio with you.
Yeah, likewise.
It's been a good minute.
Have you been?
Girl.
Where have you been? I'm joking.
I saw you yesterday. So, yes, is your domestic worker meeting the full potential of their role? Now, we've always said that much of our productivity as a country begins in our households, and that domestic workers are our greatest asset in that regard. So since we started the Mate Sessions, we've explored all kinds of skills that create new opportunities for domestic workers while benefiting the homes they work in. And now, drum roll, we have officially built a virtual school called Maid Academy, where South Africans, that's you, can access training and infrastructure to upskill their domestic workers to become an even greater force of well-being and progress in their homes. And what we'd like to do today is introduce a monthly series called How Heroines Are Made, where we reveal to you all the hidden powers of South Africa's domestic workers. So, Tuliza.
Yes, I loved your intro. It was lovely.
Thank you. Let's do 5 basic skills today, and you can go first.
Okay, so we're starting off with swimming. Disclaimer, I do not know how to swim, so it'll help for me to take the lessons.
Exactly.
So with swimming, I mean, I think these are some of the facts that most of us know. For one, it is therapeutic. So some people do physiotherapy in water, and it also ranges to early childhood development, with children learning to swim at a young age. It's great for the joints. It's great for exercise. It's low impact. And it also boosts your happy hormones and your relaxation hormones. So overall, water is incredible.
But it's also dangerous, right?
That also. I mean, just a personal anecdote, but my cousin drowned when he was 4 years old.
Oh, no.
And he was alone with a domestic worker.
Oh, no.
And his father, yeah, was at work. His mother was at work. And, I mean, till today, it is an absolutely traumatic thing that just that can't be erased. And so, besides all the absolutely beautiful things around swimming and water and, you know, the recreational components and that kind of stuff, it's also one of the most dangerous things in our homes. And so it's really important that in the moments when your domestic worker is alone with your children, that if anything like that happens, that she knows almost immediately what to do.
And the funny thing is that often in homes, the parents will ask the domestic worker to watch the child swim without necessarily realizing that the domestic worker probably doesn't know how to swim and couldn't do anything in a crisis. I think it's very rare actually for people to think of swimming as a life skill. And that's not something that I did for a long time as well, until I heard stories such as these. Until, you know, you're kind of in the ocean, maybe the tide is high and you're feeling a little bit unsafe and you're looking for a lifeguard, then you start to realize, actually, flip, swimming just went from being fun to being something that I need to survive.
Yes,
you know. And so it's definitely one of the crucial skills that a caregiver should have.
And what's so great about it as well is that it's not like it takes up extra time. It's not a skill that you're giving that'll take up more of her time. It's that she will be highly effective in case an emergency happens. And not only is she going to be effective for the employer's family, but she'll also be effective for herself as well as her family. And so it's really quite a huge overall benefit. You know, a lot of people benefit from this one person knowing how to swim. And what's great about the offerings that we found is that it ranges from, you know, single person lessons. So say your domestic worker is a bit shy of her body. She can have intimate lessons. And some lessons are only 15 minutes long. So it's not even like it takes a lot out of one's day. And then it also ranges to, you know, three or more people. So you could actually have a domestic worker with a child and they could learn to swim together.
Yeah, which is quite fun and really bonding as well.
But it's so crucial that at any point, whoever is with your child knows what to do.
No, absolutely. And I kind of liken it to a lifeguard who can't swim and the irony in that. And if you think of domestic workers as guardians of children's lives, essentially, when you're not around, your domestic worker usually is your child's number one lifeguard. And so it's completely insane that she wouldn't be able to swim and potentially save your child's life.
Mm. So, yeah, I might join your domestic workers in their lessons.
Because I would not know what to do with you in the middle of an ocean.
Girl, I need to know how to save myself. But so, yeah, definitely besides knowing something as crucial as swimming, if a child were to fall into the water and your domestic worker or even you are able to retrieve the child in time, it's then important to know CPR and first aid.
The best way to put it is actually an extension of first aid.
Yes.
'Cause so much first aid happens after somebody has almost drowned.
Yeah, definitely. And I've started to see the value of that marriage. Like a lot happens when someone's near drowning, you know, how do you get water out of someone's lungs? How do you make them breathe again? If they have bruises, how do you tend to their bruises? All those kinds of things. You know, I wouldn't know how to tend to myself, and I'm an adult. But you know, if something happened to me, I wouldn't know how to. So, I think it's crucial. And again, if this is someone who will spend a significant amount of time around your child, I think it's important that they know certain skills. And also, children have, you know, a lot of energy and sometimes don't know or understand limits. So they will jump off something. They'll try to touch something hot. You know, it depends on these different age ranges. And sometimes they will hurt themselves. They'll burn themselves. Allergies, you know, and maybe not knowing that they have a peanut allergy and it clogs up their respiratory system.
Yeah,
so there's really so many different things that can happen that are completely unpredictable. And again, it can be at times when you're not around as a parent. And so I think it's really important for first aid, you know, just a general understanding of first aid to be known. And the thing about learning first aid is that you have to renew the learning. Because it either gets old or you forget it if you don't do it enough. And I mean, we pray to God that you don't do it enough, that you don't find yourself in so many situations that you know first aid off by heart. But every 3 years, they say you should renew it.
I know we've reinforced the importance for domestic workers that care for children. But ultimately, in your home, if you think about it, your domestic worker is everybody's number one support system, right? She is, in fact, your first aid. She is the first person who will come to your aid. So the irony, again, in the person who you rely on to be your first aid, not knowing first aid, is insane. And it isn't just about kids, right? You never know when you're going to find yourself in the pool and you have an accident. Any number of things could happen, right? You could pass out, you could have a cramp in your leg. Any number of things could happen that put your life in danger as well, even as somebody who knows how to swim. And then, you know, definitely even for those without kids, just living by themselves or couples or even the elderly, right, who have domestic workers, there's constantly a risk that something could happen to you, you know? And I think that we can all agree that we trust our domestic workers with our lives, with our families' lives. And so I think it is crucial then for us to be able to equip them to save our lives. And I think also just, you know, to approach it with some cultural sensitivity, especially from a swimming point of view, because a lot of domestic workers will come from backgrounds where, or communities where just swimming is not a thing, you know, and they might have a fear of water. But also not to shy away from it because you assume that, You know, I think it should be her choice, but I think it is a crucial conversation to have with her.
Absolutely.
The other important thing that isn't obviously kind of a in case of emergency skill, but is certainly helpful in all kinds of ways, is driving. And having been an au pair, I know the value of driving for parents. I mean, it's 60% of that job, right? I feel like if I didn't know how to drive as an au pair, I would have literally lost 60% of my value. And to put it differently, if the domestic worker knew how to drive when I was an au pair, I would have lost 60% of my value. And just, again, you know, for parents to ask themselves, would I still need an au pair, or would I need an au pair as much if my domestic worker knew how to drive, I think is a crucial question. Because maybe, you know, and that's not to say you wouldn't need an au pair altogether, but that's just to say maybe you would only need her for tutoring. Mm. And maybe then 50% of the money that you pay to an au pair could go towards bumping up your domestic worker's salary, right? Because, you know, her role is so much more all-encompassing.
Mm.
You know, and then there's money in there you could obviously save for yourself as well.
Yeah. How much time, say, in a week or a day, were you spending just driving?
I mean, it felt like the whole time. It's like the reason I hate driving. I didn't much like it before then, but now I actually hate driving because I open.
Okay, so let's take a day. About how many hours would you spend in a day driving?
In a 5-hour workday, 3 to 4 hours were spent in commute or en route. So there would often be stops where I'd have to take a child to an extramural like swimming, and then I would stop for half an hour. You know, but even that was kind of part of the driving mission. So I think 4 hours were spent on the go.
Wow.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
So if we were to take the 4 hours of driving, so that's 20 hours in a work week.
Right.
And that's 80 hours a month.
Sure. That's a significant saving, right?
Yeah.
That's a significant. And if you think about you pay an au pair salary hourly, so you calculate it hourly, so if you're paying your au pair 60 rand an hour, that's 60 times 80.
And do you feel like driving can be easily incorporated into her, you know, domestic workers' daily routines and chores?
Not just easily incorporated, I feel like it's a must. I feel like it's the missing piece, you know. And again, it's not just about parents, right? Just think to yourself, first of all, I think everyone who's had a domestic worker or has a domestic worker has had this thought, like, if only she could drive right now. And it usually happens just after she hands you the shopping list. And you're like, flip. And yeah, just from that perspective alone, think about the amount of time you spend getting groceries. And she'll make the shopping list and she'll unpack the groceries. And she'll help you use the groceries, right? She'll prepare meals. She'll do the cleaning. She's instrumental in all of this.
Hmm.
The one thing she can't do is drive. That's the one part where she needs you to do her job.
Huh. Very interesting way to put it.
Yeah.
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 And also when you think about it, even in terms of emergencies, again, say your child is choking
or whatever. She's managed
to do something, but she's still got to rush the child
to
hospital.
There we go. Again, an extension of first aid that, yeah, you know, should actually probably be packaged in first aid courses, right? Do you know how to drive? If anything had to happen to you and you needed to rush to the hospital, that would be a matter of life and death if your domestic worker didn't know how to drive. Okay, so there's other things like, you know, what if you need to drop something off at a friend's house, but, you know, you're juggling things. You're juggling your schedule and you need to do something at home, or you have something to finish at home, but you need to drop something off, you know. It would be really convenient then to be able to ask your domestic worker to do that, whether it's something at your friend's house or it's dry cleaning, for instance, right? Mm. That's something that she could easily help you do so that you were able to focus on things that actually really need your time specifically, right? And then the other thing is just like, you know, taking your car to a valet.
Yeah.
Right. That takes up a significant amount of time.
Yeah.
That you could save.
It's the kind of convenience that Uber Eats has really understood.
And Aaron's literally like consume everybody's time.
It does. Admin.
Oh. Admin. And it's the annoying things, I think, are the things that don't necessarily need your time. Yeah. Right? Where somebody in your life could be equipped to help you with them.
Mm.
You know, driving doesn't need your time specifically. Getting groceries doesn't need your time specifically. Taking your car to a valet doesn't need your time specifically.
You know what's magnificent about that as well is that it cuts out micromanaging.
Mm.
Because if you have to step in just to drive, it messes with the domestic worker's rhythm.
Mm.
Because if she has to wait for you to do it, and then...
Exactly. And again,
so
I think...
It creates a better balance.
The perfect way to sum it up is why it's this one area where she needs you to do her job.
Yeah, so I think it segues well into the other course that we have, which is a cooking course. And this is an 8-week course that's a really well-designed housekeeper's course, cooking course. But, I mean, what we've seen significantly in a lot of households is that domestic workers will, you know, sometimes make the lunch. But at the same time, domestic workers tend to also have, you know, their own kinds of foods that they enjoy.
And we all do, just culturally, you know.
Mm.
If I had to cook for a family that wasn't mine, it would be a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's not just a cultural thing, it's like a personal taste as well. You know, we all eat different things.
Yes, definitely. And so this course allows the domestic worker's skills to just be a bit broadened so that she'll be able to finesse the things that she loves, finesse the things that you love, as well as know how to make better lunches, healthier, more nutritional, that kind of stuff as well. Quicker, the better skills you have at cooking, the quicker you are.
Mm.
And so it creates more time convenience as well. And then it also becomes a skill that she can pass down while she's spending time, you know, in the home with your children. If she's there while your child is doing homework, that can also be a little playful pastime because, you know, she's learnt the lessons on some kind of professional level. And so it becomes a skill that she can pass on.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the great thing about our approach to cooking is it's about principles that can be adapted to suit any kind of diet.
Yeah.
Essentially. But it's just knowing the basic principles to be able to adapt, you know, because then she'll be able to read recipes that you give her a lot better and to apply the methods a lot better. And that's really all she needs. And a big part of what our courses will do is go through stuff around math and numeracy. So how do you measure amounts when you're using a recipe? And then methodical stuff like whisking as opposed to mixing, and you know what utensils are best to use for what. So basically it just makes her into a cooking machine, and then that you can then tailor to suit your specific needs.
The other thing that's great about cooking and cooking lessons is that they also show you what are good and healthy things to buy. So like what are GMO you know, foods versus what are very healthy and organic.
Mm. What is GMO?
Genetically modified.
Thank you.
Something.
Mm.
Yeah. So, and you know, a lot of the times these things look the same or look similar, branded the same. Like a lot of the times it'll say something dangerous on the ingredients section, but I know that most of the time I don't know what those dangerous things are. So I don't even know what to look at when I look at the container to see whether this is natural or not.
Mm.
And so cooking course is also great with that, to really decipher what those kinds of words mean, what those kinds of ingredients really are, and where to source them and that kind of stuff. So it's a very important thing, actually.
Mm.
And it's become an important skill to have in a generation where a lot of our foods aren't real.
And also, just because your domestic worker spends a significant amount of time with your child, I think it helps for them to pass down good habits and not to just do things out of convenience, but to be more deliberate about your child's diet and what they communicate to your child about what they should eat on their plate and what they shouldn't eat on, and you know, all kinds of things around, like giving them a rationale to communicate around why certain foods are bad for your child. So yeah, I think from a childcare point of view, that's something that's extremely important.
We're also working on an in-home cooking training course, and this course works to really tailor the lessons according to your preferences.
Mm.
So that's really great, because maybe the things that you wish you knew how to cook that you're not sure how to, or that overwhelms you, you don't have time to do, this course really helps you to get to that stage where you feel very comfortable with the things that you enjoy in terms of cooking.
And then lastly, and maybe the most important thing, is safety and security in the home. So neighborhood crime is a real thing. And, you know, we've all heard chilling stories from people who've been affected. And we all do the best we can to protect our homes and to protect our families. But unfortunately, not all of us can afford security guards or armed response systems. And even those things don't provide us with any guarantees, right? So for the most part, we just hope to God that it will never be us.
Yeah.
That's all we do. Just like knock on wood. Hopefully it will never be us. And it's really debilitating to feel like there's nothing more you can do. And the thing for me that scares me about like armed response systems or police or, you know, maybe even security guards to some extent, and certainly things like household insurance, all these mechanisms that we put in place, is they're not preventive.
Yeah.
They're all responsive. They're all they react or they respond to something that has already happened.
Absolutely.
Right?
Terrifying.
And that's extremely, extremely terrifying. And, you know, we all know that in any event, prevention is much better than cure. But I think we're all sometimes living under this false assumption that all we can do is respond, because mm-hmm. we're not always in our homes. But there is someone who is always in our homes, you know? And things like safety habits and things like, you know, catching warning signs in the neighborhood when there's maybe suspicious
yes.
activity or communicating with neighbors, you know, these are things that we're not necessarily able to do because we're not always home.
Mm, being able to notify which car seems to be coming frequently along the street.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
Or just knowing when something has happened two streets down, you know, and it might be moving its way up, you know, if there's like a frequent occurrence, just to be able to trace patterns. These are things that we can't do because we're not always present in our homes and we're not always present in our neighborhoods. But these are things that domestic workers can do. And the first prize is to try to ensure that these things never happened in the first place. And domestic workers, fact, are more present in our homes and neighborhoods than anyone else. And whilst this can be a negative thing because it does put their lives under threat, it can also really be a good thing if we teach them to safeguard themselves, to secure their homes, and to gather intelligence in the neighborhood about suspicious activity. And this is a great thing about a woman called Penny Stain, and she's been on the show before, and she works with the police to train domestic workers in self-defense and in preventing neighborhood crime. And she covers a range of courses that are mostly preventive, but also do kind of aid domestic workers in helping themselves and in supporting you and protecting your home in case of a real emergency. And I think, you know, this thing about networks, if you think about, you know, intelligence is such a big part of solving or preventing crime. You
yeah.
know, this is why central intelligence agencies are really important in government, right? And who better a CIA than domestic workers in the neighborhood? Because whilst you may drive past and see them huddled and think that they are gossiping, actually what they're doing is exchanging what could be very valuable information.
Yeah, so, you know? And could be surveilling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is something that is very unique to first of all their role in our communities, but also to the way in which they communicate and the way in which they socialize. If we live in these very gated communities where it's rare that we interact with our neighbors and build community around, you know, solving neighborhood issues. And I think domestic workers are coming from a culture and communities where there is still that kind of element of we all communicate.
Yeah, that's very true.
So that we can aid each other in living better lives and in protecting our communities. And so that's something I think that we definitely need to be tapping more into, especially in suburbs.
And you know what's so sad about gated communities is that there's less visibility. You know, the more solid walls are,
yeah, exactly,
the less you're actually really able to see what's going on.
Exactly.
And so it requires the presence of an actual person. So there's some corners that cameras can't catch, but a domestic worker or whoever's in your home can hear sound.
Mm.
So that then at least breaches the walls.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, a domestic worker's presence is so significant in moments where security and what is a responsive or reactive security fails.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's so many inventive ways where you can actually secure your house. And little hacks around windows and doors and dustbins, for instance. The other day, I heard a story from a domestic worker, and apparently this is something that's quite prevalent, right? So you know those big bins, those pick-it-up bins that we all have in our houses? You know, we slowly kind of throw our refuse during the week and then pick it up, we'll come once a week and we'll take it out. Now, apparently what happens is you'll leave it out there for pick it up and they'll empty it. And sometimes what criminals will do is jump inside the dustbin. So when the domestic worker goes back out to get it, there's a guy in your dustbin. And once, you know, either he'll jump out at that point where she's least expecting it and your gate is wide open, or she'll drag it inside and then he's inside your home. He's like on your premises. And I imagine there's so many of these things that we don't realize.
Yeah. And it's so easy, say you live on a slope, you know, it's so easy to like not realize that the dustbin's heavy because it's easy enough to roll, you know, so it's not even that the weight is always immediately evident.
It's stuff that we don't always think about, like, are the curtains closed or open? And what does that say to criminals? Are the lights on or off? What does that say to criminals? That's if she point. Goes out to the store to get bread and she's the only one at home, what are the best impressions she can give that somebody is home?
Yeah.
So how to change your patterns. But these are things that you and I don't have the time to think about, right? Because literally, we leave home in the morning, dash out, dash back in at night, and then the last thing on our minds, once we're safe and sound inside our homes, is this stuff, you know? We want to spend time with our families, we want to watch TV, we want to sleep.
And a lot of us can't change our habits, you know? Say we have 9-to-5s, we have to work around that, but you can change when you go to get groceries.
Exactly. Your housekeeper can also be an asset in terms of passing on the information, you know, because you may not have time to do that kind of course either, or to apply it, you know, but she could perhaps help you and your family to build better safety habits as well.
Yeah.
And so that's what Penny Stain's been able to do, is develop these hacks and these systems that your domestic worker can use to secure your house and also to protect herself.
Absolutely. And she has about 70 courses, really extensive. She's interviewed criminals. She has worked quite extensively with the police force, who have a database of the many different ways that criminals have accessed different neighborhoods. And so her work is really well researched, a really great body of work.
So these are just things we wanted to share with you today to start with, that give you insight into how much potential your domestic worker has in your home, untapped potential by virtue of her role. And these are skills that are valuable to anyone, but I think they're not devoid of how important and how well positioned she is in your home.
And we can't talk about this without talking about pay.
No, we can't.
And it's really just to break down the true value of what one person can hold. If you think, for instance, about hiring an au pair on top of hiring a domestic worker, that's about 45 to 80 rand an hour. If you were to hire a cook, that is really pricey. You know, it ranges from like 320 to 380 for 3 or 4 course meal.
Wow.
If you were to hire a driver, that's on average about 6,000 rand a month extra.
Mm.
And if and even if you were to calculate it in terms of Uber rates, it's also significant. And increased security, I mean, that's, you know, security guards, cameras, all that kind of stuff. You know, all of that stuff adds up. And it just happens that one person can embody so much of that. So I think that person that has the ability to embody that should also see that value in terms of compensation or in terms of benefits, you know?
Sure. I mean, I think if you had to give your domestic worker just these 5 skills we've spoken about and actually do the numbers, you know, calculate on a spreadsheet how much you were saving in rands and cents.
Yeah. And time.
And time, if you had to convert time to rand and cents, I mean, that's even more,
yeah.
Right? But even just time aside, if you had to calculate how much potentially you were saving in rand and cents, right?
Mm.
I mean, even a delayed response to an emergency can cost you in hospital fees.
Yeah.
So those are things that you need to take into account. So simply then adding 20%, 50%, even 100% to her salary is not a fraction of what you will ultimately save yourself. So I think, yes, it's definitely something crucial to consider is the monetary value of these things. And ultimately, the point is you wouldn't work for a company that didn't give you training and support that you needed to do your job, right? Because that sets you up to fail. Similarly, if we're going to entrust our domestic workers with the things dearest to us, right, like our families and our homes, then before we hold them accountable, I think it's also up to us to ensure that they're equipped with the right things.
I want to touch on some of the upcoming, I mean, we just started Maid Academy, but we're already tailoring some new courses. And these we've uncovered from discussions that we've had with some employers and the kind of demands that are out there. So we're tailoring an Airbnb course, which is really becoming quite a norm now, that some will just have a certain part of their house that's rented out, you know, whether it's just a room or the cottage. And so to be able to welcome a foreign guest is quite different to welcoming anyone.
Right.
They should know how to settle in. They should know where the nearest stores are, what the Wi-Fi code is, where's the nearest place to grab a taxi. So their lack of understanding of an environment means that whoever's hosting them needs to know just a little bit more information in order to really host them well. And maybe even to drive them around to some significant places in the city and that kind of stuff. So this course really works to gear someone up to be a really good
and
host.
Then that's an instance where she'd be helping you make additional income.
Absolutely.
As well. So if you trained your domestic worker to help you with an Airbnb, that could go really far in terms of subsidizing whatever increment that you give her for her skills.
And your ratings, I'm sure, would be really good as well. So to really sustain your good reputation. And to sum up our points, I think it's best to bring Richard Branson in.
Of course.
To round it up
for
us.
Who else? Who but Richard Branson?
You know what I'm saying? And he says, train people well enough so they can leave. Treat them well enough so they don't want to.
It's such a lovely quote, because I think that when we upskill our domestic workers, sometimes the fear is that they'll move on to greater opportunities, or opportunities that we can't provide them, which, mind you, is a good thing, right? So no one should be trying to restrain anybody else from progressing, because doing low-income work is not ideal for anyone. You know,
and so many didn't even intend to do it permanently anyway.
Exactly. And so I think the same way you wouldn't want to be held back at work because you were the best. Say you hated being a receptionist, but you were the best in the world, you know? And then your boss decided that he wasn't going to give you that, like, Excel training so that you could become, I don't know, a bookkeeper, because that's always what you wanted to do. That would be a bit shocking. But I think it's something we can do subliminally, is just to try to hold people back because we need them.
Yeah.
But I think the beautiful thing about that quote is that rather than not upskilling people, to upskill them so that they can better serve our needs and our relationships with them.
Absolutely.
Is the way to think about it, right? So as the boss with the receptionist, you might want to think, how much more could my receptionist do for me if she learned Excel? Or if she could do some bookkeeping, would she go from being a receptionist to being a PA? Could she help me with my bills? So there are always ways in which I think we can broaden the scope of the value that we exchange with people.
And I mean, just a quick story about Jonathan Robinson of Bean There Coffee Company. He trained this one guy to start up his own, just coffee spot at a market in Cape Town. And so he started with one coffee maker. Mm. And Bean There paid for it, and then he had to pay back Bean There. So he paid it back. He was doing really, really well. He was able to buy another machine. Then he did really, really well. He was able to buy another machine. And this is out of his own money. Now he's doing really, really well. And Jonathan sort of mentioned, he felt some type of way, you know.
It's human.
Because, you know, yeah, he's thriving without me. He won't come back. I won't get back the skills that I offered him, that I gave him. But what is great about that relationship is that he gets all of his coffee from Bean There Coffee Company, the guy that he trained. He gets all of his coffee. So although he's left, he has become a client, you know, and so he's still getting, but in another way.
Mm.
So the benefits are different, but they're there.
Nobody in South Africa wants to lose domestic workers. But the fastest way to lose domestic workers, I think, is if we create a situation that is unsustainable for them in terms of opportunity and in terms of what they earn, because then they will go for the next alternative, the very first next alternative. They'll jump at the very first opportunity to leave. And that's a scenario that we need to try to avoid, right? Because increasingly there will be opportunities that benefit domestic workers outside of domestic work. What we want to try and do as MAID is to create a larger scope of opportunity within this crucial sector that we all depend on.
Definitely.
Mm.
And with that, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Maid Sessions with CliffCentral.com. So
it's a singing voice.
Do go onto our new website, maidlabs.com, and
the maid-labs.
Actually, I'll just let you do that whole
thing. I know. Why is it like this?
I don't know.
Okay.
Thank you for
I apologize. Guys, it's me. I make life complicated at all times.
But support MAID Academy and make domestic work in South Africa sustainable.
You can go to our website, maid-labs.com. So that's maide-labs.com. And our Twitter page is @maid_labs. Our Facebook page is maid.labs.
There is right. No way I will ever
spicy.
Get that. Drops mic. you make me feel so incompetent every time you say that.
No, you know, the only reason why it's this complicated is because of the symbols that Twitter allows.
Oh, you're not just like
Facebook
a maestro,
allows,
right?
I
like a genius
you.
Who can retain all this information about like dot this, dash that. You show off. Let's take this offline. Thanks so much, guys. Cheers.
Bye. See you next week.
CliffCentral. I've got something important to tell you. CliffCentral.com.